Dave Strider's Good Ideas. By God to Your Meme. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Dave Strider's first idea, the sinking of the Titanic and great Dave Strider disasters. The best laid plans of mice and men often go astray. George Carlin, or whoever. As far as Dave Strider is concerned, saving an irrevocably doomed ocean liner is child's play. He's created an entire universe and allowed its population to run its course unfettered for thousands of years. Now, having observed that the tiny little people inhabiting said world have somehow managed to roleplay every mistake humanity made before, he feels compelled to play the part of a true hero. He successfully saved a few random citizens from certain doom. These successes have emboldened him and further cemented his conviction. In theory, he could do something grand. He could prevent Earthsea's version of World War I or thwart the assassination of this universe's Abraham Lincoln, but he figures he should start with a smaller disaster. And so he finds himself aboard a luxurious ocean liner on the crisp, clear, moonless night.
15 April 1912. 0830. Fix the coal fire.
Dave first appears in the most inconspicuous spot he can think of, the potato washing room. Located on E deck, the bare bones space is a far cry from the mahogany lined elegance of the public facing areas. By the time he arrives, it's mostly empty. Nobody really questions why or how he, a perpetual 18-year-old clad in a bright red suit, is rising from a massive stack of tubers like a zombie claws its way from a grave. There is similarly little commotion when he pulls at his phone to stare at the map he'd downloaded. In theory, he should be more careful. He promised everyone this would be a quick journey, and he has no intentions of creating another time paradox. Aside from being annoying, such affairs are a real headache to solve. Unfortunately, solving the first potential problem will require some creative thinking. Now, he personally doesn't think that the coal fire that smoldered away in Stokehold 9 could have doomed the vessel. Located in a staff-only section, it may have weakened a bulkhead, but it's far from the only problem. Still, if he plans to succeed, he should check every box. There's no easy way for him to access the boiler rooms. He doesn't have a uniform, and trying to hitman his own getup seems unnecessarily risky. Fortunately, 5 iterations of his future self, almost all of them are clad in period-appropriate Edwardian garb, arrive as he walks into a public corridor. Such an arrival is a welcome, if not vaguely concerning, sight that prompts a slight hum of concern from present Dave. So, asks Dave Prime, why did I send 5 versions of myself? The first Dave to answer, clad in dirty trousers and a wrinkled button-down shirt, offers an enthusiastic reply. We're decoys, he announces. Dave 2, looking quite uncomfortable in a formal 3-piece suit, nods in agreement. We're about to get our asses hauled to the brig so many times, dude. Dave 4, dressed in a very bad approximation of a White Star staff uniform, shrugs indifferently. Look, we trial and error the fuck out of this. You're gonna fail this a few times. Like, here he stops. Another Dave, this one inexplicably wearing his God-tier outfit, bursts from a restricted doorway. Upon seeing other versions of himself, he pauses long enough to wave. The brief stop gives a burly stoker enough time to tackle the hapless time traveler and haul him below deck. Ah, I see, says Dave Prime, and his lips press together to form a thoughtful line. The voice of Dave 5, wearing a horrifically out-of-place naval uniform, pulls everyone's attention back onto the mission. You, he points at Dave Prime, will want to follow us. He waves his hands at both himself and the other 4 Daves, as close as he can. When one of us gets yoinked, keep walking. Oh, Dave 3 finally speaks. He materializes a less garish suit, this one made of plain brown tweed, and hands it to Dave Prime. So about you, Coast 2?
But this is so fucking stylish, pouts Dave Prime. Rose even made it just for this.
You know, Rose didn't do her goddamn research about period-appropriate attire, did she?
Dave 3's left eyebrow arches above the upper rim of his wireframe glasses. With a bit more force than is really necessary, he shoves the suit into Dave Prime's chest. And a reluctant Dave Prime complies. He pauses time long enough to change. When he's done, he gives a very serious, ready-to-go sort of nod to the group. What follows occurs as such. The first to be taken out is Dave 5. Spotted by one of the vessel's many stokers, he flees, screaming like a madman back to the public-facing areas of Deck E. As the group reaches the entry to the dust and grime of the boiler rooms, Dave 4 is escorted away. Dave 3 accidentally trips and falls directly into the ship's third boiler,
While Dave 2 suddenly disappears mid-step, a stoker's attempt to arrest Dave 1 smears an ample amount of coal across Dave Prime's outfit, giving him just enough cover to duck into stokehold 9. The commotion gives the only remaining Dave plenty of time to whip out a modern fire extinguisher and douse the entire area in a healthy coat of fire suppressant. Once he's certain he's suitably smothered the flames, he returns the invention to his inventory and dusts off his hands. That's one job done.
Official apology from the God of Time. I freely admit that I didn't notice my 6-hour apple vape slipping out of my pocket and falling into boiler 5. If I had, I would have undone that. Unfortunately, the little thing didn't explode until I was well on my way to solve another problem. My fucking beat.
14 April 1912. 10-12. Fix David Blair's mess.
According to Roxy's haphazard research, some poor sap named David Blair was supposed to be the ship's second officer. However, White Star reassigned him, and Mr. Blair took the keys to the storage locker that contained the binoculars. Of all the potential causes for the RMS Titanic's sinking, Dave has marked this issue as the easiest to solve. His first order of business is to swap out his clothes. On his way to the upper decks, he picks a lock. He slips inside a luxurious Louis XV pilot suite on C-deck and strips off his coal-streaked suit jacket. And it is at this moment that another version of Dave appears. This one, henceforth known as Dave B, offers a reassuring thumbs up before walking purposefully across the room. A muffled fight comes from behind a nearby door. At the end, Dave B emerges with a black eye and a bloodied nose. You might want to hurry up with that, dude. Dave Prime narrows his eyes. Did you just fucking kill John Jacob Astor IV? Dave B shakes his head. I would never. That really fucked up the timeline. I just knocked him out. He's fine. You gave the richest man on the ship a severe concussion? It takes all the self-restraint he has for Dave Prime to respond with a little more than a raised voice and a twitching eye.
You fucking moron! You can't just go around beating the shit out of influential historical figures!
It worked an adventure at a time, Dave B shrugs, and Dave Prime, now thoroughly fed up with this version of himself, responds by knocking out his alternate self. He then finishes pulling on his pants and snags the room key from a polished wooden table. On his way out, he locks the door and hands the key to a passing stewardess.
I found it on the ground, he lies.
Belongs to Colonel Asher's room, just trust me, man. He doesn't stick around to hear the reply. Instead, he sprints his way down the ship's various corridors. He breaks off into a staff room, steals a uniform, and uses his newfound disguise to access the crow's nest. There he leaves a pair of binoculars. One more problem solved.
Official apology from the God of Time. Okay, so I'll admit that I should have thought this one through a little more. Leave me out a pair of tactical digital binoculars for a bunch of people who just figured out electricity wasn't my best idea.
14 April, 1912. 1300. Check out the gym.
Returning through the opulent grand staircase, Dave decides that he's earned himself some free time. His next real stop won't happen for another few hours, after all. So after claiming a fresh change of clothes from an unlocked room, he purchases a ticket to the gym. It is, after all, supposed to be pretty damn fancy. And it seems to live up to its reputation. The white wood ribbing along the ceiling is lovely, as is the large White Star advertisement mounted on the wall. The machinery is cutting edge, or as cutting edge as something from 1912 can be. As he wanders through the now empty room, he spots another version of himself. This one, Dave C, is wearing what is very clearly a White Star uniform. He's smirking and straddling the electric camel. Flipping a switch causes the machine to slowly sway back and forth.
Where'd you get that outfit?
Dave Prime asks, injecting a healthy dose of honey into his words.
Me?
Dave C points to himself and feigns confusion. I don't know, man. I just work here. I've never seen you in my life. After a long, tense pause, he forgets that he's on a fake camel ride and raises his hands in faux surrender. The act sends him sliding gracelessly off the side and directly onto his face. Dave C has been knocked out. Sighing, Dave Prime picks up his fallen alternate self and hefts him over his shoulder. He staggers down the hall and reassures the concerned purser that he's merely helping a drunken passenger. He carries his alternate self down the hall and into the first unlocked first-class room he sees. He's lucky enough to snag one with access to the private promenade, from which he promptly dumps his unconscious future self.
Can't get a minute of peace out here, huh?
He mutters to himself. When he turns around, he finds himself face-to-face with a roughly 30-year-old man. His brown hair is sleeked back, and a pair of oval spectacles rest on his nose.
By God, he mumbles, jaw agape. Did you just kill a man?
Dave blinks. He pulls his phone from his pocket and snaps a quick photo. The app Dirk had built quickly identifies the man before him as Canadian Hudson Joshua Creighton Allison, According to the information provided, he's slated to die. Well, Dave reasons to himself, if he's gonna die anyhow. A swift pull and a shove is all it takes to send the slack-jawed Canadian overboard. To placate his mild guilt, Dave peers over the railing. The ship is going fast. The tiny, bobbing dot disappears quickly. Sorry, man, but hey, chin up. You're gonna die anyhow. Official apology from the God of Time. Gotta crack a few eggs to make an omelet. Pulling out for Hudson, y'all.
14 April 1912. 1620. Steer away from the iceberg field.
According to the app on his slowly dying phone, the next order of business is steering the ship away from all those pesky icebergs. If the vessel never encounters such a beast, there's no reason to worry. The only problem is that doing this step requires a bit of social mixing. Fourth Officer Joseph Groves Boxall happens to have the untimely distinction of crossing paths with Dave Strider. Initially, his plan was to knock the hapless staffer out with brute force, brain damage be damned. Instead, after discovering some duct tape and chloroform in his inventory, he takes an alternate route. "Sorry, buddy," he bemoans, tossing the now handily restrained and thoroughly unconscious man onto one of the empty first-class beds. As he strips away Boxall's uniform for himself, he continues his apologies, saying, "This'll work out peachy, just chill here for a while." After changing, Dave casually exits the room and wanders the halls. It takes only a handful of moments to emerge onto the bridge, where he finds the captain.
"You look different, Boxall,"
Captain Smith says, gray and white eyebrows twitching suspiciously. When he exhales, his mustache bristles.
"And didn't you just leave?"
"Maybe," Dave blinks. He hasn't thought this all the way through. Clearly his best option is to wing it.
"Yo, boss man, I got some real bad news. This ship, she's gonna sink if you don't do anything, by which I mean move this baby a whole lot more to the south, you feel me?"
Now the old man blinks.
"Officer Boxall, are you drunk? And why are you suddenly American?"
At this moment, Dave remembers that the man he's impersonating is supposed to be from Yorkshire, England. He has never been to such a place, not even on Earth's Sea, and he has certainly never tried to imitate that particular accent, so instead of trying to do so, he continues his ill-advised improv session.
"I'm thinking about becoming an actor, Captain."
He nods energetically and smiles.
"I'm trying not to be a podunk Yankee. How's it sounding?"
Smith breathes in, shakes his head, and blatantly ignores Dave's advice.
"He'll drunk, Boxall. Go sleep it off," he says. "And get out of here. I can't have you distracting me."
Official apology from the God of Time. I probably should have worked on my improv before this. Sorry, all, but we can just still avoid the iceberg, right?
14 April 1912, 2002. Try to avoid the iceberg.
The fatal icy behemoth won't appear for another 3-ish hours. The lookouts responsible for spotting the iceberg late will just be getting ready to assume their duties, if he can convince them to make the call even a few minutes earlier. Dave decides to target Charles Lightoller. He's the typical mariner. He has a wide jaw and thinning brown hair. The second he steps into Dave's view, he's immediately accosted by a babbling 18-year-old God of Time.
"What's up, dude?" Dave drawls.
"Boxall?"
Lightoller's eyes narrow, much like Smith's, as he studies the pitiful excuse for a disguise. Either his vision is bad, or he simply doesn't want to bother with what is currently happening. After a moment, he shakes his head.
"Do you have something to say?"
"Yeah, I just wanted to warn you about fucking massive blocks of ice, you know? Icebergs!"
Dave leans in closer and pats Lightoller on the shoulder. Beneath a carefully pressed uniform is plenty of hefty muscle.
"Oh, nice, you're fucking ripped."
Lightoller blinks and his mouth falls open. Dave, too, blinks. He, however, adds to his reply. His smile widens as he pats the man's shoulder again.
"Anyhow, you want to watch out for icebergs."
"I don't think you're in any shape to give me advice, Boxall."
With a huff, Lightoller pushes Dave aside.
"And work on that American accent. It's positively horrid."
Official apology from the God of Time. On the plus side, I think he got knocked overboard, but if he didn't, I'd like to preemptively apologize for dropping my phone. If this causes a witch hunt or something, it's my fault, and I plead the fucking fifth.
14 April 1912, 2330. Try to avoid the iceberg. Round 2.
Attempting to knock out William McMaster Murdoch goes badly. The former Dave Prime ends up shot dead and thrown overboard. The new Dave Prime realizes that trying to change the ship's course by force is probably a bad idea. Unfortunately, he's running out of options. The clock is ticking. In just about 10 minutes, the ship will meet its end. He has to do something, and it seems his future self agrees. as Dave Prime 2 appears on deck, now clad in a slightly less shitty approximation of a White Star officer's uniform, he finds himself accompanied by another version of himself, then another, and another. Then they suddenly begin appearing with concerning frequency. Some are dressed in halfway decent disguises, others wear the standard god-tier fit, and others are dressed in black jeans and a red and white baseball shirt.
Oh my fucking god, Dave Prime 2 mumbles, running his fingers through his hair. I'm about to bomb this so fucking bad!
The sudden, near-simultaneous arrival of over 1,000 more Daves, each in seemingly increasing states of defeat, only confirms this conclusion. A sudden, distant shuddering rumbles beneath Dave's feet.
Oh my fucking god!
He shouts, now staring angrily at his countless alternate selves. None of us, not a single one of us managed to do anything? He buries his face in his hands and sighs. Then his survival instincts kick in.
I'm fucking gotta get out of here.
Apparently, the many other Daves have reached the same conclusion. One by one, then after a few seconds, seemingly all at once, they disappear. And Dave lands, face first, in the apartment he shares with Karkat. With his ass firmly stuck in the air, he releases a long, defeated sigh. He hears steady, heavy footsteps approaching. He doesn't need to write himself to know it's Karkat. He doesn't need to hear his voice either. But as Karkat is wont to do, he does so anyhow. After slurping what is surely a pouch of cramp-free sun juice, he tuts.
Let me guess, he sighs. You failed.
I failed big time. Dave groans.
Official apology from the God of Time. Well, this is embarrassing. Deepest apologies to, like, literally everyone on the stupid ship. Apparently overloading an already sinking ship with, like, 2,500 clones of yourself is a really bad idea. But on the plus side, at least 300 of those dead schmucks were just me, so the actual death toll is only, like, 1,500. My god, that's the same as it was supposed to be. What the fuck? Well, mark that as a fat fail.
Dave Strider's second idea. If nautical nonsense be something you wish.
TurnTech Godhead, TG, opened memo on board. I did a whoopsie, TG.
Okay, so let me just start off by saying, in my fucking defense, I try my damnedest to, like, not let that boat sink. So let's write that down in our notebooks, kids.
TG.
Like, it's so clearly not my fault that any of this happened.
TG.
In fact, it's clearer than the big honking chunk of ice that started this whole fiasco, so that's completely off the table right now.
TT. TT. TT.
Raised eyebrow emoji.
TT.
I am reading this entire diatribe as a statement to the effect of, I, David Strider, have once again attempted to meddle in the affairs of the Carapacians. This is, of course, despite my intelligent and articulate sister Rose's nigh-omniscient warnings, so I shall now place blame on anything but myself.
TT.
Does that sound correct?
CG.
Yes! Thumbs up emoji!
GA.
Yes! Thumbs up emoji.
EB.
Pretty much. Thumbs up emoji.
TG.
No!
TT.
Raised eyebrow emoji times 3.
TG.
Look, this was not a mission failure.
TG.
Call this more like a dry run.
TG.
I was practicing for the next time, so this ain't like a total dud.
TG.
Sure, we may have cracked a few unfortunate eggs to make this omelet, sorry, Hudson, but we can still salvage this.
TG.
Do not! And I cannot fucking stress this enough, do not attempt to salvage anything out of this bulge-chafing, piss-guzzling excuse for a rescue attempt, Strider.
CG.
That's it. End of transmission. Broadcast finished. Whatever banal terms you mindless water sacks use to convey the idea that a statement has concluded with complete and unshakable finality.
GA.
I suggest listening to your husband on this matter, Dave.
TG.
Mahuso wussy now? Swirly eyes emoji?
TT.
Knowing grin emoji?
CG.
We are not husbands, Kanaya.
CG.
I reject such a brain-dead human definition of romance. We've established as much multiple fucking times. We are a quad pan-romantic couple with predominantly red and black leanings.
EB.
Yeah, so no offense.
EB.
But all of those words sound made up.
CG.
I will ram my fist so far down your chittering windhole that...
TG.
Okay, I silenced him. We are back to being perfectly fucking peachy.
TG.
In fact, we're, like, feeling so fine that we may as well be a freshly sharpened 10H pencil.
GA.
What is a 10H pencil?
TG.
One that's sharper than a number 2 pencil.
GA.
What is a number 2 pencil?
TT.
I'm growing weary of this.
GA.
I was merely asking questions.
TT.
Not you, dear. Dave, do you have a point? Or are you merely pestering everyone for shits and giggles at this juncture?
GA.
Does he ever have a point at all?
GA.
That is another question, by the way.
TT.
Point taken.
Nodding emoji.
GA.
It was not a point, it was a question.
TG.
Yeah, okay, so I kind of forgot what I was going to say. Now you've gone and derailed the most kicking locomotive of ideas to ever grace Earth's sea.
TG.
Class is missed.
TG closed the memo. Turntech Godhead, TG, began pestering carcinogeneticist, CG, at 1112. CG.
CG. What could you possibly want?
CG.
CG. And why are you messaging me? We're in the same fucking room, you imbecilic shitheel!
TG.
Yes, this whole failing to say the Titanic thing's really gone and bummed me the fuck out.
CG.
And that is my fault because...
CG.
Oh, that's fucking right! Oh, that's fucking right!
CG.
It's not my fault.
CG.
I explicitly warned you. Hey, you blithering mass of misfiring neurons. This is a really bad idea. Maybe you should get a normal hobby.
CG.
And did you listen to me?
CG.
Of course not.
CG.
Because nobody ever listens to Carcat fucking Vantis.
CG.
Why do I even try?
TG.
Shy fingers touching emoji?
CG.
No!
TG.
Shy fingers touching emoji?
CG.
You want consolatory sex for-
CG.
Hold on, class. Professor Vantis needs to check his notes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I see. You want me to fuck you to make you feel better about accidentally killing 1,500 people?
TG.
Yes.
CG.
Judgmental emoji. Grimacing emoji. Pissed right the fucking hell off emoji!
TG.
Dude, are you fucking texting me a face journey?
CG. CG. CG.
I fucking hate you!
TG.
Awesome, so I wanted to keep up the whole nautical theme we got going down here.
TG.
It's like...
TG.
You know.
TG.
If nautical nonsense be something you wish, Jolly Roger emoji.
CG.
I do not wish!
TG.
Oh, you kind of do, though.
CG.
And I do not know what they say, Dave, and why is there not an air talons emoji?
TG.
It's from a TV show.
CG.
I'm also unsure of who they are!
TG.
They're like,
CG.
Because they, much like you, sound like a bunch of glue-huffing wigglers!
TG.
Dude, don't talk shit about they.
CG.
I...
TG.
That's like...
TG.
Racist.
CG.
I...
TG.
Hey, come in, be downstairs.
CG.
I.
CG.
Pointing gun at own head emoji.
TG.
Cool, see you there.
Turntech Godhead, TG, ceased pestering carcinogeneticist, CG, at 1146.
Your name is Carcat Vantis, and time travel is a uniquely unpleasant experience. Dave has, on multiple occasions, insisted that you get used to it, and that shit ain't all that bad. But you beg to fucking differ. The sensation is akin to being sucked through one of those ridiculous curly straws that Roxy always uses. You feel your physical and mental existence getting rudely condensed to a single point. Your entire experience is packed into a tiny dot in the infinite expanse of space's cold, uncaring stupidity. Then, all at once, you're unceremoniously flung about. A loose pebble in an otherwise empty tumbler. Whatever subatomic part of you is actually, your brain is forced to listen to the collective howls of the universe. When it ends, you find yourself wearing little more than a pair of stupid heart-covered boxers in what you can only describe as the inside of a soda can. You're small for a troll, but you're wide enough to feel as if you're being actively crushed. Your shoulders rub against the roof of the contraption, and you must tightly compress yourself to fit. Your first instinct is to stare directly ahead, meet Dave's shaded gaze, and shout, "What in the name of every unloving deity have you gotten us into this time, Strider?" Dave opens his mouth to respond. You can feel the stupidity oozing from his lips, even before that initial ah of impending nonsense. But before he can so much as think of continuing, another voice barges rudely into the echoing fray.
"You motherfucking cunts!"
it begins. Both you and Dave spin around to face the serendipitous ringleader of this vessel, or rather, what is quite obviously Eridan in a black morph suit. The frilled fins on either side of his face have ripped through the unconvincing Carapacian disguise and are now wobbling with indignant rage. Fortunately for everyone, whatever he was planning on saying gets overridden by a cacophonous. The entire flimsy structure shakes and... End of attempt number one. Thursday, 11 November, 2100. 0800 hours. Dave and Carcat's apartment. Your name is Dave Strider, and your latest romantic advance has gone a bit sideways. You wake with a vague memory of being squished into an unknowable number of fleshy, microscopic particles and the taste of metal and seawater in the back of your throat. Your bright red cape, which stays on during sex, is strangely damp, as are your boxers. You reckon that your quadromantic life partner, seated to your right, looks just about as stunned as you feel at this precise moment. His thick, wiry eyebrows are pinched together, and the edges of his lips are yanked downwards to form a deep, disapproving frown. You're about to issue an incredibly sincere apology when he opens his mouth, revealing teeth as nubby as his stupid horns, and thunders,
"Did you just get us killed?"
"Well," you begin, extending the vowel to cover your uncertainty, "I wouldn't exactly say we died. We're like immortal gods and all that, you know? No, man, we just, You wither beneath Karkat's steady glare, your dicks pushing against your boxers, but goddamn if you aren't feeling vaguely intimidated. When you were younger, when everyone first arrived on Earthsea, his indignant rage was downright hilarious. He, a scrawny little bitch of a troll, was nowhere near as threatening as, say, an 8-foot-something Gamzee. But now, with all that extra girth and an extra foot of height? Oh, hell, is he—
"I'm fucking speaking to you, Strider!"
Karkat snaps his fingers in front of your face, his claws clank together with a pleasant staccato click, a sound that sort of reminds you of a typewriter. You know you should be listening to him. He's your husband, no quadromantic partner, and all that hoopla. He's also a smoke show with muscles as big around as your head, and a voice that rubs your every neuron like the world's most irate master masseuse. By the time you've finished processing these feelings, you're about ready to rip his boxers off with your bare hands. The look on his face, all straight lines and edges that clash with his otherwise curved form, demands answers. You gleefully provide none. Instead, you reach out, grab his wrist, and reassure him, "Don't worry about it, cat. I'll figure this shit out in advance. Call that a test flight." A force akin to electricity, like the buzz of lightning about to strike, fills the air. There's just enough time for Karkat to begin protesting, and you hear just a fragment of his prickly protest.
"You slobbering dumbass! If a test flight crashes, it's a fucking failure! What the—"
Before time bends to your will.
Carcinogeneticist CG began pestering Turntech Godhead TG at 1148. CG.
"I will rip your weak intestines from your abdominal cavity and strangle you with them, Strider."
CG.
"I, who made your miserable universe and presided over its nascent mediocrity, have beheld many mistakes. I have seen the birth of countless cretinous ideas. I have beheld the pupation of every brainless, grub-fucking time some micropanned human has humanly blurted, 'Hold my human beer!'"
CG.
"None have so much as approached the sheer, gormless agony that is your existence."
CG.
"Fuck you!"
TG.
"Well, okay there, man, let's back it up a few steps."
TG.
"One hop this time."
TG.
"Two hops this time."
TG.
"Charlie Brown."
TG.
"What the fuck were you even supposed to do there?"
TG.
"Did anyone even know what the fuck a damn Charlie Brown is supposed to be?"
CG.
"What are you even saying?"
CG.
"Explain to me why I should so much as entertain the mere idea of giving you a third chance to properly complete this stupid idea."
TG.
"Oh yeah, that, whoops."
TG.
"So first of all, this next hit won't be the third strike?"
TG.
"As we've established that this was in fact the trial run, so this will be the second try?"
CG.
"I just watched you kill a man and some random teenager!"
TG.
"No, they're just knocked out, man."
TG.
"We both know those Carpathians have, like, stupid durability."
TG.
You could chuck one of them fuckers at a wall and it'd be fine."
TG.
They just aren't that good at, like, swimming or taking bullets or, you know, the standard shit that kills things."
CG.
"Judgmental emoji."
TG.
"I promise the hot speed sex will be so worth it once I figure this out."
CG.
"I fucking loathe you, Strider."
Carcinogeneticist CG ceased pestering Turntech Godhead TG at 1203.
Attempt number 5. Sunday, 18 June, 2023, 942. North Atlantic Ocean. Your name is Karkat Vantus, and you're not exactly pleased to be facing a wide-eyed, balding Carapacian as your tentacle strokes your quadromantic partner's dick. The two of you have discussed voyeurism before, but you've never bothered trying it. Now you're quite certain that you dislike the sensation.
"Loosen up a little, you jerk,"
Dave mumbles in your ear as he tries to massage your stiff muscles into a more workable state. He's facing the back of the submersible, away from its occupants. You, of course, are left to stare at the other three dolts in this doomed tin can. The two Carapacians, who Dave has informed you are run-of-the-mill rich business folk, stare directly at you. Their beady eyes seem to bore directly into your soul, and their slack-jawed confusion is making you ponder too many possibilities to really immerse yourself in your work. Only Slimy Recycler, the artiste, formerly known as Eridan, has the decency to turn his back to the scene and hide beneath that smelly cape of his. At just a hair under 6 feet tall, Dave is far from small. He is, however, much lankier than you. He kicks his feet against the floor of the submersible and floats. Earthsea's rules give his weightlessness priority over your mass and muscle. He easily flips you on your back and squeezes himself against the ceiling. He's grabbing at your tentacle, strangely soft hand stroking its length like a precious treasure, as he idly comments,
"Come on, cat, lock the fuck in. What's taking you so long?"
"Well, maybe you don't care, but I am having a hard time getting my bulge worked up with two insects ogling me,"
you counter.
Oh!
Dave withdraws his hands and raises them into the air. They're covered in sticky, translucent red pre-cum.
"Well, in that case, we try again?"
"Could have just told me you wanted us to be a party of..."
TurnTech Godhead, TG, began pestering carcinogeneticist, CG, at 1231. TG.
"Sorry I got us imploded before you could come." Frowny face emoji.
CG. CG.
I...
CG. CG.
"I need you to take a second to read what you just sent me, Strider."
CG.
"Really sit there and digest the absolute hoofbeast shit that has flowed from your fingers."
CG.
"Are you doing that, dear? Are you listening to me?"
CG.
"Now tell me, what the fuck is wrong with you?"
TG.
"Rose says it's CPTSD. Grinning my ass off emoji.
CG. CG.
"Disgust and despair emoji.
CG.
I hate you so fucking much.
TG.
But that's like...
TG.
A radical hate boner, right?
TG.
Shaw fingers pointing emoji.
TG.
It's so sexy when you want to strangle me to death with my own viscera, babe.
CG.
Why am I even still letting you try this?
TG.
Because you're horny.
TG.
Duh.
CG. Carcinogeneticist CG ceased pestering TurnTech Godhead TG at 1246.
Attempt number 7. Sunday, 18 June, 2023. 9:35, North Atlantic Ocean. Your name is Dave Strider, and your alien boyfriend slash husband slash panquadromantic partner is currently doing what he does best, ramming a pulsing tentacle dick up your ass. Unlike a boring human appendage, Carcat's bulge can reach everything. You moan and roll your hips as it explores your body, but there's still something missing. You've neutralized most of the outside threats by hog-tying them and leaving them aboard the mothership, the MV Polar Prince. There are no extra eyes to ogle what's happening between you and Carcat. Nothing will interrupt this moment. No, scratch that. Exactly one thing can interrupt this moment. Despite your best efforts, the expedition's leader still managed to beat you onto the submersible, and you have a fatal schedule to maintain. Thus, Science Refuser, who is, despite his protests, still Eridan, is duct-taped to the far, non-windowed end of the submersible. Carcat has tied a ripped length of red heart-adorned underwear over the exposed eye slots of an increasingly tattered morph suit, and you stuffed a dirtied sock in his mouth. Where once there was a stream of curses and jeers, there is now little more than severely muffled and truly nothing can spoil this. No, strike that. Two things can interrupt this moment. The occasional pops and groans of the metal that surrounds you act as reminders. It is at this moment that you are struck by what you can only explain as the best idea of your life. "Danger!" you proclaim. And some red, jelly-like alien cum smears across Carcat's chest when you push him aside.
"That's what we need! This needs some more danger!"
"As if fucking in a submarine that's..."
Carcat pauses long enough to check his watch.
"Approximately 10 minutes from fatally imploding isn't dangerous?"
A raised eyebrow and a chittering hum punctuate the question. Try as you might, you can't suppress a smile as you pose your challenge.
"How fast can you finish, dude?"
Attempt number 9. Sunday, 18 June, 2023. 9:40. North Atlantic Ocean. Your name is Carcat Vantus, and—
God fucking damn it, you just shoved a claw right at my delicate mammalian anus!
Dave's moaned statement is accompanied by a series of heavy kicks against your knees and an ineffective punch to the center of your chest. After withdrawing your left hand, you counter by tightening your prehensile appendage's grip on Dave's cock. You jerk the coiled section up, eliciting a pleased sigh, and push the tip deeper into his ass. At the same time, you push your face closer to his and say,
"It would be so much easier to do this if we weren't in a fucking death trap at the bottom of the ocean, you blithering, bulge-chafing moron!"
"Has anybody ever told you..." Dave's right hand reaches behind your ear, fingers deftly massaging a pressure point until your shoulders arch back. "That you are amazing at sex talk?"
I'm like so indescribably horny right now. Nothing turns me on like a thorough teardown.
This is not supposed to be attractive, you piss brained little shit!
Despite your yelling, you are aroused. Dave's grin digs beneath your skin and presses every button possible. Yes, even the negative ones. When he runs a hand down your thigh, your entire body shudders. There's a blossoming warmth between your legs and muffled squelching noises coming from your tentacle. Dave knows what's about to happen. Judging by the way his hips are rubbing against you, he's about to reach the same conclusion. Were it not for the fact that he is, in fact, Dave Goddamned Strider, you'd be pleased with yourself. Alas, being who he is, he gives the moment a swift kick in the groin by moaning in your ear, crowds going wild, Vantage is slam cannon time!
As much as you want to deny him any sort of pleasure after such a remark, biology demands otherwise.
Your tentacle tightens, tenses, and then releases. Warm, viscous genetic material bursts from its tip, and Dave breathes a sigh of pleasure as the substance fills his ass. It's all disgustingly bright red, but he loves it. He's told you as much. And he says it again, too, in his own stupid way.
Call me a jelly-filled donut the way my ass is.
If you so much as attempt to finish that statement, I'll shove more than one claw up your refuse chute.
Alien fisting? I don't know, pal. Sounds kind of hot.
Dave's voice is wispy, his face is flushed. And the pinkish hue highlights the darker dots speckled over his nose and cheeks. He leans deeper into your touch and grasps borderline wildly at your back, but his arms aren't long enough to fully wrap around your torso. And you prefer it that way.
Oh, fuck. That's it,
he moans. And his hips rock against your pelvis. Oh, yeah! He's getting close. His breathing hitches in his throat as the most endearingly pathetic little moan in the world. His lips are pressed against the crook of your neck now, and you feel them part ever so slightly as his hard dick rubs against your thigh. He's right fucking there. A hair away from exploding.
Carcinogeneticist CG began pestering Turntech Godhead TG at 1305. CG.
So.
CG.
Aww.
CG.
Sorry I couldn't make you come before we both, you know, fucking died in a submarine implosion. Frowny face emoji.
TG.
Technically, it's all submersible.
TG.
Big difference.
CG.
Is it?
CG.
Is it really that big of a fucking difference, you grub-munching-
CG.
Actually, that's not my problem.
CG.
Unlike you, I am mature enough to let my apologies stand in the face of such monumental stupidity.
TG.
Yeah, it was close, but that only counts in horseshoes, you know?
CG.
What the fuck is horseshoes?
TG.
Horseshoes is like, CG. Why the fuck would you think I give one feculent shit about what horseshoes is?
TG.
Nah, yeah, that's fair.
CG.
Back on topic, Vantus.
CG.
Anyhow.
CG.
Sorry about that. I will begrudgingly admit that I was almost kind of enjoying all of... whatever the fuck this entire thing is.
CG.
I don't think we can properly call this sex. We're certainly not mating, as there's no intent to create genetic offspring. We passed foreplay 15 respite block collectives ago.
TG. TG.
You mean a fucking... block?
CG.
Now is not the time to be testing your luck, Strider.
CG.
Do you want me to try this again? Because persisting with your usual intentionally aloof coy act is how you turn me right the fuck off.
TG.
Oh shit, Mubby.
TG.
Yes, sir, Mr. Nut, Sir Crockett.
TG.
Please stuff my ass like a nice little donut again, sir.
CG.
Less typing, more timing, jackass.
TG.
Salute emoji.
Turntech Godhead, TG, ceased pestering carcinogeneticist, CG, at 1313.
The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. The music is Dave Strider Wins Forever by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, a link to my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.